Welcome to Letter from the Capitol, a bi-monthly podcast covering national security, economic, and cultural issues.
Greetings, I'm John Wallstetter, your host. Welcome to my Letter from the Capitol podcast. Today we will discuss the upcoming elections and which major revelations could shift the Senate to Republican control. The question is, are voters waking up? Begin with open borders. A former Border Patrol deputy chief said recently, quote, "We're back to a pre-9/11 situation, basically, and this administration did that in the past 5 years. All of the good that was done after 9/11 up to now has been reversed single-handedly," unquote. The ex-chief continued, quote, "When you see the cartels, the Zetas and the MS-13 and the Gulf cartel laughing about this on the internet, you know what's behind it," unquote. So drug cartels and gangbangers and coyotes are cui bono under the new situation. They benefit. One factor driving anger at the wave of illegals is that America's generous welfare system undermines potential economic benefits immigrants have historically generated. The Daily Beast published a migration map that enumerates dangers on a scary 1,700-mile train ride from Guatemala to the Rio Grande. If anything, the map is too soft of the full spectrum of dangers. Murder, mayhem, rape, child abuse, and the like have been chronicled. Those supporting President Obama's open borders invitation policy are thereby countenancing the horrific 1,700-mile train trip most of them take. In all, an odd form of compassion. Meanwhile, the illegals, including children, board aircraft without showing ID, are sent clandestinely to sundry states without governors being informed, including those of the president's own political party, a practice the White House risibly claims is justified by privacy rights, and languish in refugee camps to which members of Congress and reporters are given little or no access. The mayor of Lynn, Massachusetts, says her city is overwhelmed by a flood of 600 child illegals who do not speak English, are illiterate in any language, and lack funds for educational health services the town is required by law to provide. The mayor said, quote, "We have been aware of the unaccompanied children issue for quite a while, and we were able to absorb a lot of these children early on, but now it's gotten to the point where the school system is overwhelmed, our health department is overwhelmed, the city's budget is being substantially altered in order to accommodate all of these admissions in the school department," unquote. Among Lynn's, quote, student, unquotes, are adult illegals posing as students, some whose age is estimated at 30 or 35. Longtime political insider Pat Buchanan, White House aide for Presidents Nixon and Reagan, warned that immigration could cause a breakup, balkanize the U.S. He notes that most illegals are poor, do not speak the language, and will go on welfare. The political impact is apparent in deep blue California. Buchanan warned, quote, "When the country looks like California demographically, it will look like California politically," unquote. The president's deliberate engineering of an immigration crisis is dividing America into factions and imperiling constitutional arrangements. It could conceivably, irremediably fracture these United States. That, alas, is his idea of success. ISIS, Intel, Iraq collapse, another major issue. Several propositions are now clear to any voter paying attention. President Obama completely decamped from Iraq and told voters during the 2012 campaign that al-Qaeda is on the run and that America's wars since 2001 were ending at last. America's exit from Iraq created a rare textbook example of a clear test of major policy change. The president and vice president claimed credit for a stable and secure Iraq, and American forces were not taking casualties. Had Iraq remained stable and Islamists suppressed, the president would have been vindicated. It instead spiraled toward the kind of chaos that in 2006 engulfed the country. In the 2006 elections, Republicans lost control of both houses. President Obama's precipitous exit, carried out against the unanimous contrary advice of his top military advisors and many top civilian advisors as well, led to the fragmentation of the governing coalition between Sunni, Shia, and Kurdish factions. With no American presidents to provide a universally trusted mediator, and with hand-picked commanders selected by the Americans for competence replaced by political hacks loyal to recently ousted pro-Iranian Prime Minister Maliki, the Iraq army broke and ran. ISIS is a successor to Al-Qaeda in Iraq, founded by a former Guantanamo detainee sent in 2005 to Iraq, from where he was released. Presidential daily briefs, the highly classified detailed intelligence summary delivered to the Oval Office, alerted the president to the growing threat of ISIS. The president tried on 60 Minutes to throw the intel community under the bus, but senior officials pushed back. With former Obama Secretary of Defense and CIA Chief Leon Panetta, a highly respected top player in Washington for decades, respected on both sides of the aisle, supporting this narrative in his memoir, and even former President Jimmy Carter, nobody's idea of a hawk, saying that Obama waited too long to act, the president's credibility imploded. Secret Service. The story emerging from the White House on the sudden intrusion of Omar Gonzalez reads like a hackneyed cable television series plot. On September 19th, a guy, armed with a knife, jumps the fence, makes a 70-yard bum rush across the apparently unguarded north lawn to the front door. It is unlocked. The security alarm is turned off at the request of, get this, the usher's office. The intruder literally bowls over a female agent and makes it to the east room and then passes the foot of the stairway leading up to the first couple's bedroom. Finally, a burly male agent in the White House, despite having been off duty, tackles him. There have been 16 fence-jumping breaches of White House security in the past 5 years. The stuff has happened despite a doubling in real terms to $1.7 billion of the Secret Service budget since 1998. What? Oh my God, in the president's principal residence untouched, capable of taking hostile action? It seems that the Secret Service prided itself on exercising, quote, tremendous restraint in carrying out its security tasks. While lethal force may lawfully be used against an apparently unarmed intruder on White House grounds, let alone inside the mansion, it is a matter of agent discretion. Such implies in-depth training plus knowledge that superiors have their back. If it's with this administration, optics is always in the forefront. Agents may feel unduly constrained in moments like this. The ex-chief, Julia Pearson, was installed in 2013 after a sex scandal involving agents on overseas duty. She was, writes Washington Post pundit Dana Milbank, brought in to change the frat house culture after the Columbia sexcapades. Pearson, since being appointed, had briefed the president only once despite serial security lapses. Pearson, for her part, said she wanted the agency to be viewed like Mickey Mouse at Disney World. Perhaps we should reincarnate Annette Funicello and have her take charge. This is the latest in a series of security breaches. On November 11, 2011, 7 shots were fired into the White House, causing $100,000 damage. Secret Service supervisors ignored reports of shots fired coming from agents on the ground. Initially thought to have been car backfires, in later investigation showed that it took 4 days to discover a bullet mark on a window facing the South Lawn. Worse, the discovery was made by a housekeeper who found broken glass, not security personnel. The first daughters were in residence at the time, and in a separate recent incident on September 16th, the security contractor took an elevator ride with the president during the one's visit to the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. The man was armed with a gun and had 3 felony convictions. Enter Ebola. In 2010, Team Obama killed draft rules of the Center for Disease Control per President Bush in 2005, which would have quarantined visitors with possible infectious diseases, including Ebola. Adam White at the Weekly Standard notes how after Katrina, Senator Obama went after George Bush. White then offers this, quote, if Mitt Romney had said in 2012 that a second Obama term would bring not just continued economic uncertainty, but also the reemergence of international terrorist forces, Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, an illegal immigration crisis, a knife-wielding madman in the White House, a beheading in Oklahoma, and the Ebola virus in Texas, even the president's most paranoid critics would have told him to calm down, unquote. Washington Free Beacon editor Matthew Continetti details Obama administration flim-flam ray Ebola. Quote, It was in the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, where the president told the American people that the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is not a threat to our country. President Obama said the chances of Ebola appearing in the United States are, quote, extremely low. We have world-class facilities and professionals ready to respond, and we have effective surveillance in place, double unquote. Belatedly, the White House moved to impose new screening at 5 major airports. Yet late last week, airplane cleaners staged a protest threatening to stop cleaning planes unless they are given protective gear to reduce their exposure to Ebola when engaged in the grisly task of collecting human waste and bodily fluids. And today's news brings a sad tale. A nurse exposed while caring for Ebola patient one. After Katrina, Senator Obama also ripped Bush for lack of preparation for the avian flu epidemic of 2005, one far less lethal than Ebola. Enter the voters. With a Democratic primary in disarray, GOP candidates can channel the 1988 mantra of Democratic presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, quote, this election is not about ideology, it's about competence. It did not work for Dukakis, it may work for the GOP. Also, borders, ISIS beheadings, the Secret Service and Ebola are rolling events mainstream media outlets cannot ignore or downplay, as they largely did, Ray, the pre-2012 election scandals over IRS targeting of political enemies, the terrorist assault on Benghazi, the fast and furious supply of guns to drug cartels. As with the Obamacare rollout disasters, voters easily understand this new crop. One party will be jubilant after November 4. Candidates for the losing party may echo the pungent response of Senator John Culver, a freshman Iowa senator ousted in the 1980 Ronald Reagan landslide that carried 12 Republicans into the Senate, giving the GOP 54 seats and control of the upper chamber. Culver, asked how he felt afterwards, snapped, quote, the people have spoken, the bastards. Four letter from the Capitol. This is John Wallstetter. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute. Letter from the Capitol is a trademark and copyright of John Wallstetter. Rebroadcasts of this podcast are allowed only with permission of the Discovery Institute. For more information, please visit www.letterfromthecapitol.com or www.discovery.org.